Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Houston, Texas and Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Houston Bigfoot. I'm Dr. John Stamey, and we're glad to be here tonight. My co-hosts include, first of all, from Houston, Texas, Kyler Smith. How you doing tonight, Kyler?
Doing really good, John.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Now, just we'll let everyone know that you just finished moving and going through the traumatic experience of moving couches, upstairs and everything. Did you survive?
We did. We're a little sore, but, yeah, we're in and moved in. We're all good.
Well, that's great. And from Ewing, Virginia, parts unknown as we would from the wrestling world, here's Matt Delph. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Sun actually shone today. Kind of put a smile on my face here.
Well, we're glad to have you here. It's great. And so we're going to have a great show. Now, Matt, I wanted to start off with a question that you might be able to talk about quite a bit, because you're a member or you're associated with the BFRO, which is the Bigfoot Research Organization. Now, did I get that part right?
Well, I'm not a member. I'll never be a member. But I've got friends that are members, and I got friends that lead expeditions. And so I'm definitely close to to a lot of the members of the BFRO, and I've been out on expeditions, and some of them are really close friends. So, yeah, I'm kind of associated there quite a bit, actually, but I'm not a member.
Right.
Yeah.
And I will say this. He is one of the sweetest, nicest.
Lost you there.
Yeah, I think he cut out.
All right, Matt, you
John,
there?
John, can you hear us?
There he is.
Oh, I can,
okay.
Yeah.
We
I was
everything.
Saying, you know, when you mention BFRO, the first person I think about is Lori Wade. She's one of the sweetest, nicest ladies in the Bigfoot world, along with Robin McRae. But Lori Wade's a member, and she's a nice lady, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I'm real close with Lori. She's a great person.
She's a good lady. So tell us a little bit about what in the heck does the BFRO do? Who was it started by and all that stuff? Because I think tonight would be a good night to introduce this topic to everybody.
All right. Well, the BFRO is the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, and I believe it was established maybe, I'm not positive, in the mid-90s. I'm not real positive on what, maybe a little bit later. I'm not real sure when it first originated. But it's been out for a while. It's the largest known group that gets reports, and they were the first ever database for publicly online for Bigfoot reports. And it was started by Matt Moneymaker, and he's on the show. If you've seen the show Finding Bigfoot, that's the group pretty much that started. It was Matt Moneymaker started the BFRO. And what they do is they get members. Now you have to be a member of the BFRO. Now you have got to be referred. That you got to have a referral to be a member. One thing that I don't like about there's positive and negative things being a member of the BFRO. Like I said, I won't be a part of it. I won't join the group because they don't think outside the box. They are strictly, it's this, you know, flesh and blood, ape-type creature. If you can't report any of this other stuff that's going on while you're out there researching, which, you know, we all know it all links together, but they're strictly, you know, their point of view, and that's it. But I've met a lot of good friends through the BFRO. Like you said, Lori. Lori leads these. What they do is they'll take all these reports, they got a website, and they document the reports. Well, then they send out BFRO members to whatever state or region it's in or country, because it's worldwide, and they will send a researcher out there, a team member, to interview the witnesses and see what they can find out. Now, they do a lot of expeditions. They start doing expeditions, and that's where I'd met Lori, I don't know, several years ago, and she leads expeditions in the like around the Georgia and Tennessee state area in the southeast there. And I met her a few years ago, and we've become pretty close, and other members as well. Now, her group that she goes out, she has me as a guest speaker for the groups. I go out with them sometimes, and I'll help them, you know, go out and help lead these different teams of out in the field as you're going. And one thing I don't like about the BFRO is they charge people to be a member. If you're a member, then you have to pay dues and all this other stuff. And anything you do under BFRO has to stay with BFRO. It's not, you know, get other information, whatever, to share it or whatever. It's similar, if you're familiar with MUFON, it's same thing as MUFON, but in the Bigfoot community, if that makes any sense.
Well, it certainly does, and I guess I could say that it reminds me a lot of Scientology. That's not what anyone expected me to say. My attorney and I have been discussing a little bit about L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology. And, you know, when you got a church that charges to be a member, it doesn't ask for a tithe, it charges to be a member, it seems to be self-defeating. So there you go. That is my take on BFRO, MUFON, and Scientology. I put them all in the same category. If anyone wants to get mad, bring a gun down and shoot me, they're welcome. They might have a tough time, and they might have to meet my sorcerer, and that might not be a good thing. So anyway, we'll see. If anybody wants to take, bring a gun down, that's fine. You'll be surprised what you might have to put up with. But anyway, yep, I was just being a little tongue-in-cheek or a little cheeky tongue. Well, whatever. It just, you know, it's just an interesting concept when you have to pay dues to be a member of a research organization. I've never, in all my years, my 22 years of research with the Association of Computing Machinists and the IEEE, I never had to pay dues. But yet I published 64 articles, and, you know, it's just kind of what it is. So anyway, Matt, now you should have said, shut up, Dr. John, let me continue, because I'm getting into deep waters here, but that's okay. So anyway, so that's a little bit about what it is, and they certainly have a good database. They really do. And it's not complete, because not everybody, it's like with MUFON, not everybody reports their sightings to these two organizations, do they, Matt?
No, they don't. And one of the positive things, though, about the BFRO is if you are a member, then you have access to the database of reports that the public doesn't get to see. So, but as in part of that, though, normally the database that you're looking at is usually they've already sent a field investigator out to talk to the witnesses, and it's already been investigated, and that's when it makes it on the public one. But they've got access to the database that hasn't been investigated yet. So all the reports.
Wait.
They get them
this
all.
Doesn't make any sense. I thought the whole point of creating these communities and these groups was to share this with everyone, because this is something we're all into and the government is the one keeping it from us. Why in the world would we create a new group to hide more stuff from? That doesn't make sense.
Well, there's different levels in the group. With them, which I can see part of it, because they had, okay, what they show the public what you or me that's free that you can go in and click into. You can see the reports, but they've already been investigated reports. So those are the results after they've already, you know, done the field research and they come to their conclusions and they post it to the public. So the ones that haven't been researched yet or had a person go out and investigate it yet, it's still not open to the public, only to the members of the BFRO. So they don't post that publicly until after they've already done their research and described what they've done, which I could see that because a lot of mine in my group, you can't get people in that area because they will contaminate the area. If you're going in there researching, you get a lot of outsiders. And I'll give you a good example. I was on expedition, and they had a lot of newbies on this BFRO expedition. And they had a reported sighting the night before on our expedition. So that next day, when it got daylight, I was going to head up to the area and investigate the area. And I was going to look, because I'm trained in tracking and basically everything to do with wildlife out there. So I always treat it as a crime scene. So when I got up there, they're just like staring at me because there's like 15 people out there walking around in the area where the reported sighting was. So the whole area, they're looking at me and they're like, aren't you gonna? I'm like, it's useless now, you know. You can just scrap this. And I had to explain to them, you can't just go rushing out into this field because you're going to have your tracks. You're going to overlap any other tracks, any other evidence. You're going to contaminate it. You're going to mess it up. You're going to be breaking sticks, you know. So the area itself has to be pretty much shut off until after you investigate it and come up.
Which,
you know,
sucks,
with,
too, because they're pretty much just, yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. They just pretty much ruin it for themselves.
Right.
And that's
why,
and I would make a comment here. That's why, as a researcher, as a PhD level researcher with 64 publications, I do not share any of my findings until I write about them in one of my books, because I do not want anyone coming up there and mucking around in my research business. I really don't. And Matt, I mean, I certainly agree with you on that. I mean, you have to tell, I mean, these new people, it is wonderful to have new blood, correct?
Correct.
It's great to have new blood. But people need to understand that this is not fun. Research is difficult. Research can be frightening. Am I correct on that statement, Matt, that research can be frightening? And it's like, just, you know, don't get so excited. I mean, look, it's great to feel something inside of you that says, wow, this is cool. I'm going to get to see this, but don't go over there in an overzealous manner and screw up the site. That is the last thing that you want to do. I mean, I had, and it's in my book, Look Up in the Sky, all editions. I had the most terrifying night of my life. But did I go run, jump at everything? No. I was quiet. I was calm. I didn't alert anybody. And I made sure that I was the first person outside my bed and breakfast cabin on the scene. Nobody else had a chance to see it or go into it. I mean, I had to be very careful. I didn't find any footprints. I did find the fact that some piles of leaves had been disturbed. And that's in my book. That's in my story. But you've got to be very careful when you're investigating anything, whether it's computer science, whether it's history, or whether it's Bigfoot related. And I'm glad you agree with me. You've got to be careful. You don't want to I mean, it's like, and I hate to say it, but it's a little bit like a police investigation. The police don't go out there and mess around with everything. They are very careful with what they do. Correct, Matt?
Yep, correct, definitely. You've got to treat it like a crime scene.
Well, I can see it from both sides. Yeah, I can see it from both sides because, I mean, I would get super excited if I heard that, I mean, there was a UFO sighting here just the other night. I would 100% want to go over there as soon as possible, especially if it was close. But then again, being with the community, knowing you guys, knowing what little I know now, that's obviously not smart because now I know that people are probably going to want to go research it, try and figure out as much as possible, and then come to the conclusion of, all right, well, no, this was actually just something stupid that everyone made a joke of, or, you know, okay, there might actually be something here.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to contaminate the area. Another thing, like you said, the UFO sightings, stuff like that, this group that I'll be going out with this weekend, a lot of the military type people in this group, but there, you got a lot of deal with stuff that could, I mean, especially with the paranormal, the UFO, alien, Bigfoot, all of it, you got a lot of stuff that can be hazardous in a site of a sighting because we do radiation readings. I mean, some of this stuff is, you know, radiation spikes. Anytime we've had activity in a lot of these areas, we've had radiation spikes. So you don't want to run out there immediately. You want somebody to know if there's a radiation spike in there. You could be contaminated to radiation or something, especially if you're UFO, alien-type things going on out there. I mean, it'd be very dangerous to your health.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of... That's not the first time... Sorry, go ahead. I'm going to find something real quick. John, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, Matt, we know people who have been injured by radiation. And you really be careful. So I'm glad you mentioned that. And please be careful. I've got right now an overzealous investigator. It's not a MUFON investigator. I don't know where this investigator came from. This investigator is pestering a fabulous witness. And I have had to tell that witness, tell that gentleman to call me because I don't want him getting in there, confusing the witness, because investigators who don't know what they're doing sometimes confuse the witness. Matt, you've seen that, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I said, tell this guy, if he wants to talk to you, he can talk to me, and I'll schedule a time when the two of us will be there, and you'll have someone protecting your interest. And that's why I finally got the last word on this particular sighting. I got all the information that I could, and now I'll let this other spurious investigator go do whatever he wants, because I've got the full story. But you've got to be careful. I mean, whether you're with a group, whether it's MUFON or big BFRO, or you're just a private investigator like me trying to do a good, credible job, you've got to make sure that you don't let the crime scene in any way get tainted, even from just confusing the witness. And that is something that I see happen all the time. Well, not all the time, but I've seen it happen four or five times. It's ridiculous, and that's why I've been very careful to make sure that that does not happen. This is a magnificent case, and you'll see it in Look Up in the Sky, version 3.0 that's coming out. In fact, Matt, you will be there at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference in Paris, Tennessee. You'll be there on October 1st and 2nd. The story will be out. It will be written down. It's going to be a good story, and it hasn't been confused by spurious investigators. We don't want that to happen. It's a good story. It's a great story. So, you know, you want to try to, I guess, anytime you're acting as a reporter in charge or investigator in charge, you want to be careful that it doesn't, the whole experience doesn't get screwed up. And I'm glad you agree with me. And right now I've got another investigation, and I will not tell BFRO or MUFON about this. Because I do not want anyone coming up and investigating this before I get a chance to take the statements. I'll tape recordings of the statements. They will be transcribed into the story or into the book, and I want to be very careful. I want the statement to stand on its own and to be exactly what was seen. I hope you like that idea, Matt.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, we're very close to getting the final statement, and I just don't want anyone to know what it is. Then after that, everybody can know. But I want
right.
to keep the integrity of the story, because these are, you know, I learned that from Dr. Sally Ryan Feather. Her father invented the term ESP, extrasensory perception. He was, Dr. J.B. Ryan of the Ryan Research Institute, which was part of Duke University for many, many years until he took it private in the late 80s. But he was a very careful, deliberate researcher, and he did the same thing. And Sally and I had the pleasure of being in a room with her, and she was reading me stories that people sent her, and she said, John, what do you think about it? And I'd say, sounds reasonable. Or I'd say, and based on her recommendation and my recommendation, she would decide whether or not to interview these people with great ESP and dream stories. I mean, she was a fantastic researcher, PhD from Duke University. And I'll say my PhD is from NC State, and we always joke that which one was better. I think they were both better. I think NC State and Duke University were both better than Chapel Hill, University of North Carolina. Ha ha, I just said that on our show. If you're a Chapel Hill UNC fan, suck it up, because I think NC State and I think Duke are much more careful researchers. I'm just being fun. But yeah, so that's what I've got to say, Matt. Hey, and please continue. In fact, if you could tell us an example of some good research that you've seen, because I know you've been out there with the BFRO when they have been doing research, correct?
Yes.
What are some of the good, positive things that you have seen out of them? Because I'd like for everybody to hear it.
Okay, yeah. I've researched with several groups plus my own. You know, I've got my own thing going with Mountain Empire Crypto Research Organization. But one thing I like about, like with Lori's team, for example, they are all about helping people learn its beginning phase into what to research and stuff. And during their, like if you, Lori's expeditions are great. She probably goes actually, because you have to pay to go on these expeditions, they're very costly for people to go, but that money goes towards, she's got to get permits, the insurance coverage, all that stuff, and it's super high. Did you know you're not allowed to have research Bigfoot in certain states unless you have a permit? And so they have to get these permits, and they have to get, you know, a campground or an area. So she puts a lot of work into it. But one good thing is, you know, it's basically a learning process for the newbies. They are, you know, people never come from all over the place. I've been on expeditions where, and it's actually kind of like a family reunion now when I go visit them, because got a lot of the same people that go to Lori's all the time. And so I've got great friends that are there every time. And, you know, it's our chance to meet up and hang out and do some investigating. But you got these newbies that come in and they're able to learn. And she will set up classes through the, say, for example, if it's expedition is Wednesday through Sunday. She's really well organized. And for the new people, she's got all these different classes. They've got a casting class sometimes. They've got a first aid class in the afternoon. They do guest speakers, which I've spoke lots of times. So it's really loaded a lot of information, and as they're teaching, it's great for people that have just started and have never spent no time in the woods. They come from, we might be doing an expedition in Georgia, and these people come from New York, New Jersey, some of them Wisconsin. You know, they're all over the place, Missouri. So, I mean, it's great learning experience. And I know on that team that she does, the same ones that come back, a lot of them are great researchers, and they help, you know, help the new people that's just beginning in it. And you go from that type of group to my group, and another group that I'm with is a lot more advanced. We don't take the group that I go with, like this weekend, I'll be going out on an expedition. You know, it's, we just, they don't take anybody. It's a group of like military vets, former police officers. Some of them are still involved in the government. And this team is so complex. I mean, it's for experienced, the elite, basically, in research. And the huge difference, you know, they don't go through all the people in this group that I'll be going out with are so experienced, you know, they don't have to run through the whole thing to people or whatever. You only get in there, you know, special invitation. So, but BFRO is great for that kind of stuff. And once you learn and you start building up, then, you know, you can move on to some of these other type groups. Now, with Mountain Empire, my group, I do a little bit of both. I like to have experienced, really good experienced people, and I'm going to be having an expedition for people that just get started. And that way, can teach them, you know, a lot of stuff about the woods, just investigating in general. But the BFR is a great beginner course compared to like the one I'll be on this weekend. Is so far advanced, you know. The basically the protocol in ours, we in this advanced one, we jot down what time we're going out. We have a whole list of stuff, you know, our goals for the expedition, what we're trying to do. The equipment is off the charts. We're doing radiation readings, baseline readings. You know, we document everything. Everything's recorded, recorders, which BFRO, they document everything too as well. But it's, you know, you've got your beginners, and then you've got your the elite special. Like, for example, the last time I was out with this group, I'll be out with this time, we had quite a bit of activity, and they've got a response team usually. We set up base camp. They, at night, we'll do a lot of scouting during the day, and they've already got a lot of intelligence already done on the area. And whenever, like, I'm going out, they'll send an email or shoot me an email and say, hey, this is the – they just give coordinates. These are your coordinates. This is the date. Here's the plan. Such and such time. Set out, do radiation baseline readings around base camp, whatever, you know, and so forth. And it tells, you know, the intelligence, whatever's happened in that, the folklore, the area, everything. I mean, it's awesome. I love doing it. But like our last time, it was kind of cool. We had a pretty good experience. I actually got to, they let me share Trey Hudson. He had made some videos as we were doing it. He did an update because it's not our normal research area. So he was a little bit more open on this one. And he would let them post, you know, videos, updates of what was going on. And I'm kind of excited about going back this time because last time we were there, I was out and I was still 2 hours away because I always get there late because of work. But they had already set up base camp, already set up teams. They were out investigating that night. And that very first night that they were out, I get a text. And Kristen, she's a great researcher. She's a RN, and she's doing schooling. She's going to become a doctor. So, you know, we've got these super smart people, elite, but she messaged me. She's like, how far are you from making it to base camp? And I'm like, I'm still 2 hours out. And she's like, well, we've got all this activity going on at base camp now. And she's like, I'm 3 miles out on a hike, you know. So you got people at base camp there. And the kind of activity they were having were they were hearing some kind of a chatter. It sounded like a samurai, like, you know, the kind of like an Asian language in a way. It was like, you know, it was nuts. And the radiation spike went from 0.8 up to 3 point something. And then they use the satellite radios, and they use the ham radios and stuff like that. And all the radios cut out. All their signal, internet service, everything cut out. And then, like I said, the radiation spike, they've got this little box that'll tell you, I'm not sure what it is, but like it's something, the energy, it crosses, you know, the perimeter base camp. It'll go off if something has come into the area. It'll give a spike. I don't know what it's reading. I guess just the electrical, you know, in the area kind of, I don't know if it'd be radiation or what, but it spikes it up when something else enters it. And it's really cool because, I mean, it is so, everything documented, I mean, it is so precise, everything, every little detail. And I get there at base camp finally, and they didn't, all the activity, it got quiet, it quieted down. And they said that the radios cut out. The only way they could communicate was through a regular text. They couldn't use internet on their phone. A lot of their equipment had completely just shut down. It was recorders even shut down where they record. They put a recorder on, and it shut down. So everything is shut down, all the electrical, anything electrical.
Matt, can we safely say someone didn't want you recording everything? Can we safely say that?
Exactly. You know, they.
Okay.
I don't know if they did it intentionally or if it's just the energy that they had and it drew it from the, like, phones and everything were dying. And I don't know if it's just pulling energy from these devices or what. But, I mean, it's shutting them down. It's kind of, well, I guess you could say it's kind of like a, the, you know, how they can shut down the government, develop these devices, CMP devices, to shut down anything that's electrical. It's very similar to that. So that's when you come into the whole alien type activity stuff going on possibly. And that next morning, found out what had broke into our perimeter. There happened to be an armadillo. I come running through base camp, setting everything off one time. And that next morning, this area is really sandy. So as soon as I woke up and it got daylight, I did a base camp sweep out the perimeter. I swept the perimeter to see if we had anything, you know, watching us, anything left tracks. But the only thing that had crossed that got super close was that armadillo that night. Now, the next night we had went after that night, we had let a group in. We had went down to a different area. And in this area, we had myself and Trey Hudson, we had seen, it's just getting dark, but there was a shadow figure that had crossed the path in front of us. And I'm not saying it's like a Bigfoot or anything. I don't know if this was a, what you call a shadow person or... You know, it was hard to see because the light's getting down, but we both seen it. It was a figure-type shape that crossed the path. Now, when we get to the area of where it crossed, we've got thermal, night vision, everything like that. We're scanning the area, and there is no heat signature for tracks. So whatever had crossed over could have been like a shadow person or more paranormal. And then on our way back, the woods got super quiet, and there was a nasty odor had come through the air on our way back, which was really weird because, you know, there wasn't nobody else out there or anything, and it smelled like, I don't know if it was a breeze off, you know, it smelled like just human feces. I mean, it was that nasty. And it wasn't there when we went by, but on our way back, you could smell it pretty strong. and the woods was dead quiet. So, which was pretty cool because, you know, when you get stuff like that going on, a lot of people don't even recognize that kind of stuff, but that's the stuff that you have to, you know, of course, we document it all, the change of odor, change of temperature, any type of abnormalities that come across. So.
Exactly. That was a great job to explain that. Now, Kyler, do you have any questions for Matt?
When you normally see or have these type of encounters, like with the one you were just explaining, and it crossed your guys' path, however far ahead of you it was, I mean, how long does that normally last, that encounter? I mean, is it like a couple seconds where you're like questioning if you even saw it, or it's like a good amount of time? Okay, I see.
No, this was it crossed over. It was just a couple seconds. And I looked, and I was trying to focus my eyes. I was like, is that something in front of us or not? And then Crave turned around and looked at me, and he's like, did you just see that? And I was like, yeah, I seen something. We don't know what it was, you know. But, yeah, stuff like that, I mean, it'll happen real quick. Now, sometimes you'll have something just hounding you. There'll be stuff around your camp or around where you're hiking, screaming, throwing stuff at you, you know. And this group here is really good. They've got a lot of where they film everything and record everything. They've got a lot of great evidence. Kristen's got this great picture, her FLIR video, this thermal image of a upright figure going through the woods. They've got, in our other area, they've got the this cube portal that appeared, and two members disappeared into it. And they got it all on video. It's all recorded.
Did they come back?
Yes,
they
came back.
Did the two members who disappeared, they came back? Oh, now, what was their report?
Well, they said that one of them, I know, he had said that he had stepped into it and he stepped back out because he was an Army Ranger. And he had said that he knew his surroundings had changed. They couldn't see it with their physical eye. People that was on the other teams that had the camera set up could see it through the peer spectrum camera and through FLIR night vision and thermal. So, and it was a cube. It was a cube, like, I'm trying to think. You seen Hellraiser? You know how they got that cube and it's a portal to hell? This cube is a cube-shaped object that was out there that you could only see through the special equipment that they have. And they walk into it, and you see their heat signature. And as it's recording, last time we were out there, we did a reenactment just to show, compare it to the where they disappeared at. But you can watch their heat signature as they're walking, all of a sudden just disappear. No, you know, completely gone. And I know one of the older gentlemen, he explains it like the whole that you had stars and you had grass and stuff, you know, out there in this area, and there was no more grass, there was no more stars, it was complete darkness. So,
okay.
You know, as he steps into this area, and I don't know if there's anything to do with this, but some of the members have had sickness. The one of them that had stepped into the portal had, he's deceased. He don't know if that had anything to do with it or not, but one of the other ones too is had illness that they're currently, I'm hoping that they got it taken care of, but still, you know, dealing with. So this stuff's really dangerous. That's why, you know, you just don't want a bunch of people in these certain areas.
And I wonder why it gives us, or it affects us in that way, because I was just going to say we just did the same thing. I was going to say that, like, if me just thinking of me walking into something that I'm not supposed to walk into that we have never done before, I mean, it kind of makes sense, but why we would get a sickness from it, yeah, that, I'm having a hard time with that. That doesn't.
Okay, I'll explain a little bit. Okay, in order for a portal to open, me and Angelia Shear, she was a MUFON investigator, State of Tennessee. She's actually 2019 Investigator of the Year. Me and her, we researched together and great friends and research partners. So we did the crossover, you know, the Bigfoot, that's where we knew it all tied together. So we always looked at stuff like, okay, so our portals can, scientifically, how do portals happen, you know? So, and she knows a lot of scientists, and there was a scientist out of Iowa University. She contacted him, and he told us for a portal to open, he said you got to have a zero magnetic field, and it's got to be a big burst of energy, like a solar flare. So this solar flare, it's got to have that much power, energy, to go through there with that zero magnetic, you know, field to create these portals. Now, if they're naturally made from like a solar flare, it's going to be, a lot of the Indians used to talk about being circles within circles. It wouldn't be geometrical, you know, designed. Now, this was geometrical design. So how would another source of energy use? You got to have that kind of energy to use this stuff to open these things. It's going to give off radiation. So that's why we also, if we find Bigfoot tracks or anything else, or we start having weird stuff happen, take a Geiger counter and we measure the radiation. And usually if there's tracks and it's got radiation spikes on it, then we know it come from a big power source. It could be possibly a portal. So if they are exposed to this radiation, then it's going to have some health effects on us. So
say that they open one of these and they either come from this portal or they are walking into it. Does this thing stay open all the time, or did they do it on purpose? Like, how is that still just like sitting there and nothing is around it?
Well, see, that's the thing. Since it was geometrical, we know a third party entity had to create it, whether it be UFO, U.S. government, trying something, doing whatever. Since it was a cube shape and it was symmetrical, it wasn't naturally made from a solar flare. So this third party entity has use it, and they could probably open it and close it themselves. Now, one's naturally made, you will not be able to, as that professor said out of Iowa, that's when they can't predict when they're going to open and close, because you got to have the right conditions for them to open. But they have used that technology, I believe. That's like you got going on in Oak Ridge and, what is it, CERN, where they're trying to use this power. They're running all this power through these, and it's nuclear energy, basically, and to run it down to create these parallel universes, portals, wormholes. So if it's a cube shape, they can probably open and close it, whoever this third party is that had created it. So it makes you wonder, is it coming from, I wonder, you know, that's our whole investigation on it now, is can it, create, you know, are they close by when they're creating it, or can they do this from who knows where, you know?
Really, yeah, really.
It doesn't, and like, I'm curious, like, was it opened right then and there for something to walk through as they showed up, or was it something that was left behind and something was coming back?
Yeah, we don't know. That we don't know. Like I said, I don't think after they had come out of there, I'm not sure how much longer were able to see it on the camera. I'd have to ask. But Trey Hudson, he's the one that he owns all the stuff to it, and he's still, you know, works affiliated with the government, classification intel. So he's got all this info. But he has shown, he's went to these UFO things, and he has actually shown, you know, crowds of people before. He's shown them video of them people walking into it. So, I mean,
yeah,
there's video evidence.
Great video to see.
Yeah, he does a lot of he showed it, you know, off and on. Now, last time we were there, they did a reenactment to show that it just wasn't them disappearing into, you know, they didn't go behind anything or whatever. They set up during daylight hours, showed the exact area. Then they did a reenactment where they walked and they showed that you could still see the figures that, you know, normally, just to show that it wasn't, you know, set up. Which
wow.
is really cool. I mean, yeah,
that's amazing. Well, I tell you, here's what we'll do. I've got a question for Matt, and Kyler, you'll get the last word and the last question, and then we'll be back next week because we got a lot more great stuff to talk about. Well, now, Matt, about how often do you go out with a research group in terms of, like, do you do it monthly or weekly, or how often do you actually go out, and how often do you tend to see things?
Well, I've done this enough that, like, I'm experienced enough a lot of times that I go out. If it's my private investigations, I try and go out as much as possible. I go out every weekend if I could. But with work schedule, doing this and that, it's kind of hard to get out. So this summer has been kind of slow because of the heat. Nobody's wanting to go out and investigate. Last time I'd went out was back in May, and then I'll be going out next weekend, and then I'll with my own private stuff. It just depends. So a lot of times I'll go out at least – I try to go out a couple times a month anyhow, regardless, is what I try to do. And like I said, where I go out with different groups, I've got different friends. You know, it depends. A lot of them will do 3 or 4 expeditions a year. And normally, you know, sometimes you won't have a significant – it's hit or miss sometimes on some of those others. But a lot of times when I go and investigate certain areas that I know are – I can feel is a hot spot, we have pretty good activity rate going on in some of these areas, like for my private ones, just because I know I've been doing this since 1996. So I know all the signs of where the activity is going to be. You can see it in the news. You can see it this and that, them closing parks, them doing this and that. You know, there's something going on. And you normally, if you're out there, you know, for the entire weekend, you might – sometimes you won't have nothing. I mean, a lot of times you won't have nothing. But where I'm experienced enough now to find these hot spots, usually have a little bit of activity about every time. So still waiting on that breakthrough.
All right. And Kyler, final word and question for you to Matt Delf.
Okay. Matt, I was thinking about, you know, you're talking about your expeditions that you try to do as much as possible. And you go with groups, no matter how many there are there. Do you seem to find that you're more successful with your reports or your sightings by yourself? And how often do you go by yourself if that's something that you actually like to do?
I do a lot by myself. Mine, I'm so spontaneous, and I always get in trouble because I go out by myself a lot. I'll be thinking of a witness report or something that's going on, and then I could get up and go out to area at 2 o'clock in the morning just because something hits me and I start thinking something. I'm like, oh, I need to check this. I need to do that. But I normally have more experience going out by myself, spontaneous, where I'm, you know, seeing an area. But the groups that I go out with, I've had quite a few with the BFRO, and of course the real the other group, the military people and great researchers. We always have usually something, you know. And what's cool with that is they got the equipment the equipment and stuff that you wouldn't catch if you didn't have it. You could have just been out there, mm-hmm. not even known it was happening. Didn't know that there was a radiation spike, or you wouldn't have known this or that, you know, which is always good because this stuff ain't cheap either. So, you know, the equipment. So it basically have to learn basics. And then once you move up, like I said, though, with this other group, you got other data as we're collecting all this data from the area and our investigation that you wouldn't have if you didn't have this equipment. So it just
okay.
depends, I
and
guess, on what you're looking for.
For anybody that's – no, yeah, totally. I was just going to say, like, for anybody who's been listening to our podcast every week, do you have anything to tell them that, like, if they were looking to go research and do some stuff like this, would you recommend them doing this by themselves or finding someone to go with just in case?
I would take somebody with you, find somebody that's experienced that goes out, always, especially if they're beginning. You know, you just don't want somebody out there wandering around. They could end up lost if they don't have, you know, good skills outdoors, you know, if they're not an outdoorsman or, you know, if they're not very skilled out in the field, then you definitely want to have somebody experienced with you because it's just not what you're investigating. There's other elements out there you got to deal with. So, you know, you got your snakes, you got your poisonous snakes, you got your bears, you've got mountain lions, you've got, you know, different climate stuff, navigation skills you need, you know, identify the different animals in the area that the screams that they make, the calls that they make, so you know what you're dealing with. You want somebody, mm-hmm. you know, out there that's experienced to help you, teach you basically what to look for, what to listen for.
And I listened to, I think it was either you or Elijah's YouTube page, and I heard one of those screams, and holy crap, if I was out there with just me and another person, I would be terrified. I probably wouldn't want to be out there anymore. That's insane.
Yeah, it can get pretty intense. I've seen people curl up like a ball and like a little baby. And
yep,
that
Matt, it really can, and we certainly want to thank you for your talks and your stories tonight. They've been really good. We've enjoyed it. And I'm going to go back around the room. Matt, you going to be back with us next week?
You'll have to get with me because this weekend I'll be on the expedition, and then after the expedition I'm heading to South Florida for a week. I'm going to hit the Everglades, and I'm going to be in the Keys. And I got some friends that I'll be staying with down there. So I will definitely try. I'll just have to see what my schedule is, where we're going to be at, because I know one day I'm definitely going to hit the Everglades and check that out because, you know, all the skunk ape sightings, stuff like that, do a little investigating
right,
around
exactly.
there.
And you don't want to miss that. You really don't. So that sounds like a lot of fun. But in 2 weeks, can you report back to us?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, that'll be a lot of fun.
For sure.
Well, look, thanks a lot for being here with us. Kyler, thank you. And Dr. John, well, that's me. I'm glad I was here. It was a lot of fun. And we'll have everybody back. Now, Kyler, it might be just you and me, and we'll have us a guest. Maybe we'll see about having Robin McCray on because we love Robin, and she's the queen of Scarycast, and you can't deny that. So anyway, we'll see what we can do about having a guest next week, and then Matt, we'll see you in 2 weeks for a report on the Everglades. Does that sound like a good schedule?
Sounds great.
All right. Well, look, thanks a lot, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure, and we'll talk to you soon on the one, the only Houston Bigfoot. So I want everybody to say goodbye, like gentlemen, okay?
All right, everybody have a
like
good night.
Gentlemen. Like gentlemen. All right, good night, guys.
Like gentlemen, say goodbye and thank you. And this is Dr. John. Thanks a lot. We'll see everybody next time. Take care.
Have a good night.